So here we go to this evening's talk. As usual, when I come in here, I don't have much of a clue what I'm going to talk about, but just an idea came up at the very beginning of the meditation while my mind was still moving. And it comes from a transcript of a Radio National talk which somebody sent me during the week. Apparently they were interviewing Edward de Bono and Robert Thurman. He's a Tibetan Buddhist and the father of the film actress Uma Thurman. And they asked them to comment about the question, or the statement, that ignorance is bliss. So today the talk is, ignorance is bliss. So if you wish to be happy, put your fingers in your ears so you can't hear what I'm going to say today. But it's a very nice statement, ignorance is bliss, because many people state that, but what actually do they mean? And especially that Buddhism is supposed to be like a wisdom tradition, that if you become wise, then that's supposed to solve all the problems. So what does it actually mean, ignorance is bliss? And how can we interpret that and use that? Because there must be something to it. Otherwise, it would be a saying which wouldn't have survived in our culture for such a long time. And of course, I think what most people take as ignorance is bliss is like just ignore all the difficulties and problems in the world and then you'll be happy. That's what I thought I could do as a monk. I thought, you know, it'd be great being a monk. And I could ignore all the marriage problems which go on in the world. And what happens to me now? Just ask the monks. Just people ring me up at 7 o'clock in the morning, ring me up at 7 o'clock at the night and all times during the day. Ringing me actually from many countries of the world now, because this stuff goes on the internet. And the problem is that people just call me up. You know, I always mentioned that before. It's called Dial a Monk Service. And it's free. And they asked me about all their marriage problems, what to do with their kids. And they were talking to me about what to do with their five-year-old the other day. I said, well, what are you asking me for? I never had any kids. Now, what would I know about a five-year-old kid? So, you know, you thought you'd become a monk to get away from all of that, to escape from all of that, so you wouldn't be bothered by all of that. But the point is, the idea of ignoring the problems of the world, you just can't do that. They start running after you, which is the problem with that idea of ignorance is bliss. Yeah, it's bliss for a while, until all the problems find you. And then when I was a monk in Thailand, we didn't have any newspapers, no radios, no TVs. I hadn't got a clue what was going on. And for some time, this is no exaggeration, there was a period of about 2 or 3 years in those early years as a monk in Thailand where I just didn't know what day it was. More than that, what month it was. Even more than that, I forgot what year it was. Ignorance was bliss. You were in a timeless realm. You hadn't got a clue what was going on in the world. You didn't know who was going to war, what politician was in a scandal today. It's amazing that when I did read my first newspaper, I realized actually nothing had really changed. Only the location of the war, the particular politician who made the scandal, or the particular sort of soccer team or footy team which was won and which had been relegated. So actually the structure of news stories actually stays the same every place, every time. It just, the actors change, but the script remains the same. Check that out with the newspapers and the stories. But, you know, it was as if that I could ignore the world. And if I could ignore the world, then I'd be peaceful and then I'd be happy. But it just couldn't do that. A classic example of that, you know, which showed me that no, you cannot run away from the world. This was north of Thailand. I found these wonderful monasteries, remote, lovely caves, much cooler than the central parts of Thailand or the northeast of Thailand. Really much better food. You know, even the frogs tasted more delicious up in that part of the world. Because that's what you used to eat, frog and rice. But it was a great place, and it was a great place to meditate. And I thought, look, I'm a monk. I can just be a meditator. But every now and again, even the most peaceful monasteries, you know, you have these festivals. You know, you're there as a monk. You don't want to get involved in the festivals. That's the abbot's job. Let him look after that. I just want to have a nice, peaceful life for myself. So when it became this festival day, you know, I tried to escape as soon as possible. Because I was like Western monk. And all these people from the nearby villages were coming to the temple for the festival day. I think it actually was Waisak. You know, we're having our Waisak celebration soon, next week. So it's Waisak celebration in a monastery in the north of Thailand. So I caught some nice big meal. But after the big meal, people started coming and asking me questions. By that time, I could speak Thai. And you didn't mind if it was like questions on Buddhism or meditation. That's the sort of questions, you know, it's almost your duty to answer. You could help them a little bit. I'd be meditating. I'd learn a lot of Buddhism. But these villagers, even it's the holiest day of the Buddhist year, they weren't interested in questions about meditation or Buddhism. All the only questions they asked me was what country I was from, how many brothers and sisters I had, and just what they did for a living. And, you know, that really sort of, you get fed up with that after two or three people. That's all they're really interested in. So what I did, there was a little pause in the ceremonies. And so there was, I knew the caves in the area. I literally just nicked out round the back, made sure no one saw me, got into my hut and got a glass of water, a clock and a cushion to sit on. And I ran and darted to one of the caves. And these caves were deep, maybe about 100 meters or 150 meters to the end. But amazingly, it was quite good air. Some of these caves, if you go very deep, they're very bad air. You can't stay there for very long. But this was a really nice, well-ventilated cave. And it had these long chambers, and they twisted and turned. And I went to the very end. And I sat down there on my cushion, had my water, my clock, that's all I needed. Oh, a flashlight as well. And I started meditating. I thought, I'd escaped. I could ignore all of this crowd. For me, that was ignorance is bliss. They could do their celebrations. They could do their chanting. They can do their incense on the Buddha statue. I just wanted to meditate. Just a peaceful monk. If they were interested in Buddhism or meditation, yes, I would engage. But if they were interested in just rubbish talk, no way. I'd only be sitting in the end of the cave for about 5 minutes. Only about 5 minutes, that's all they gave me when I started hearing sort of a noise, a disturbance, because it was really silent in here. And I realized that somebody was walking along that cave towards me. And I opened my eyes, and just at the end of the particular passage, just where the turn was, you saw like a light get brighter and brighter and brighter as they came closer and closer and closer. And then I saw these two men, two villagers, that poked their heads around and then just immediately ducked back in fright. They'd seen me. And I could understand Thai. One said to the other, "There's a ghost at the end of the cave. There's a ghost, I saw a ghost." I said, "It can't be, really a ghost? Let's go away." And for a moment, I thought I was in luck. Because if they thought I was a ghost, they would run away and leave me in peace. But they decided to put their head around the corner a second time. So they had a check. They looked again. And they said, "No, it's not the ghost. It's the Western monk." Damn it. And it wasn't just the two of them. There were many following behind. Because they too had been so bored with the sermon the abbot was giving, they decided just to go and explore the caves. And they just happened to come in the cave which I was sitting in. Yeah, so they all came up to me. They realized I wasn't a ghost. And they started asking, "Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters have you got? Why did you become a monk? Oh, God." And I mean, and it's experiences like that just show me that you just can't escape. You can't ignore the world. You try and escape from the world and ignore the world. You become a monk or become a nun to leave the whole world, and the world goes chasing you. So you can't do this. Even another key story which I read, which actually showed me that trying to ignore reality, ignore the world, it just catches you in the end. This was the story of a very wealthy guy. This was just before the Second World War. You know, in that boom years before the Great Depression, he'd made his pile. And instead of actually, you know, like many people get so greedy, they keep their all their investments going because it's never enough. He cashed in his chips before the depression came. So he had all this money in the bank rather than investing. This was enough for him to live the rest of his life. But he thought, why live in the United States? You've got the whole world to live in. So he went to the public library. He looked at the climate, just the culture, the people in the whole world to choose his paradise. He wouldn't have to have any work because he had enough to support himself. So he decided on an island in the South Pacific, a paradise. And the place he chose was an island in the Solomon Islands called Guadalcanal. And no one had ever heard of it before. And of course he went in there just a couple of years before the start of the Second World War. And those of you who know your history, Guadalcanal, there was two major battles, huge battles in that place. You know, with first of all the Japanese taking over and then the Americans kicking the Japanese out. And that was supposed to be his retreat, his place of peace. It would be like, you know, imagine like where I live in Serpentine, or a retreat center in Jhana Grove. You pick that carefully, you build up your monastery, and then one day you're sitting there and all the whole US Army comes and invades. That's what it was like for this poor guy. He realized you just can't escape from the world. So that type of ignorance, which is just trying to escape from the reality of the world. And I'm just not looking at it. It doesn't exist. Now, yeah, it's bliss for the time being. But when reality hits, you find any happiness or bliss you had was just borrowed. And now you have to pay it all back. And for many people, that's what ignorance is bliss means. It's just hiding your head in the sand. It's just being the ostrich. Climate change is not going to happen. Just, I am not going to die. I'm going to live forever. Someone's got to do it first, and that's going to be me. And all that sort of stuff, that type of ignorance, that's called stupidity. And that is not bliss. Yeah, it's bliss for the time being, but when you have to pay back your debts, you have to pay them back with interest. And if you think banks charge too much interest, you know, like stupidity charges 10 times as much interest as any bank. You really have to pay it back many times over. So that type of ignorance, we call that denial of the truth. But there's another type of ignorance which I think, yeah, is very useful. And that type of ignorance is when the mind just realizes there's some things which you don't really need to think about and worry about. Some things which you can ignore. For example, what other people say about you. I know I'm quite prominent now, so many people say things about me. And I've decided to be selective. If they say rotten things about me, I don't hear that. I totally ignore it. But if you say nice things about me, oh, thank you very much. Yes, I will accept that. So I decided a long time ago to ignore all criticism and accept all praise. Why not? That's bliss. Because sometimes that's actually was something which is even taught to me. He said, look, you do have choices in some things. And criticism, actually, you don't really ignore it. With criticism, you follow the AFL code. You know, I keep on mentioning this. Criticism, you made a mistake. Acknowledge it. So you pick it up, bring it out very quickly. Yeah, it was real. I did have made a mistake. You don't ignore it. But you forgive it. In other words, you let it go. You don't keep thinking about it. And you learn from it. And afterwards, you can ignore it. You've done the AFL code, now you can put it aside. But what most people do, they can't even do that. All the pain of the past, the difficulties of the past, the things which somebody has done to you, the pain of your past, all the problems you've had in the past, we keep thinking about it and cherishing it so much that we find we can't ignore all of that past. We just don't know how to deal with it. And so we do become, what I keep on saying, prisoners of the past, jailbirds of our history, people who just have no freedom, which is why I use the word prisoner or jailbird. And you know what I'm talking about. All that stuff, you can't just ignore it, because ignoring it is just, it didn't happen. You know, it did happen. But the middle way between ignoring it and indulging in it is this AFL. Acknowledge it, bring it up to the surface. It happened. Now, forgive it. Forgive it means the letting go. No punishment. No need to sort of dwell on it. And then this wonderful learning from it. Find strategies so you don't get in that situation ever again. And that's all you need to do. Simple. And once you've done that, you can ignore it. It's done its job. It's done its business. It's all over. You've acknowledged, you've forgiven, and you've learned from it. You've grown from it. And of course, because you've learned from it, you're a wiser, more a skillful person afterwards. So that's what we can ignore. But a lot of the times, it's not just real things which we've done wrong. So a lot of the criticism which we get, we didn't deserve. I didn't do that. You're misunderstanding me. And actually, much of the praise I get, I didn't deserve that. I didn't do that. Actually, a lot of the praise which I get is really quite surprising. Sometimes that people, that book which I've written, Open the Door of Your Heart, the latest edition is Croatian. I don't know how many sort of languages that is in. And sometimes people actually write to me, praising me for it's amazing, Ajahn Brahm, just how fluent you are in Croatian. You know, it's a translator. I say, oh, thank you very much. It's very good. Why not? So sometimes that those things which actually happen, sometimes you get criticized for things you didn't do. And if it's criticized for something you didn't do, you don't need to worry about it. You don't need to tell them off. You can just ignore that. Can you ignore such criticism? Or do you always have to think you have to defend yourself and just tell them they made a mistake? No, the ignorance which is bliss is where you realize it's no point in telling them. They just have an argument. And if they criticize you, and if they tell you you're stupid, we always follow one of the great teachings of Ajahn Chah. If someone calls you a dog, look at your bottom to see if you've got a tail. If you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog. End of problem. And that's what we call about ignoring it. So when people tell you off, they criticize you. You know, this is what we do, is see, do I deserve that? If you do, oh, thank you very much, you're right. End of problem. A lot of the time, you don't deserve that. So if you don't deserve that, I'm not a dog, I haven't got a tail, end of problem. Now that's what we call ignoring the past. It's not totally ignoring. You accept, acknowledge it, look at it. If you made a mistake, you forgive. If you haven't made a mistake, you just let it go straight away. And you learn from both of them. You learn no matter who you are in this world, no matter sort of how good you are, how bad you are, you will get your praise, you will get your blame, and sometimes it's totally unrewarded. But the problem is with people, when they get sort of, they get criticized, we always listen to that, we accept that. As praise, apparently, we just don't accept that at all. I was saying to someone earlier today that this is one of the things I learned when I was in Sydney, because when I go overseas, on last Saturday I went to Melbourne, I came back on Wednesday, next Tuesday I go to Singapore. So when I go overseas teaching the Dharma, I also learn, I get a few more new jokes sometimes, but they're very rare these days because I used to have to give them jokes. They don't give me any jokes, it's a one-way traffic. But nevertheless, that when I was over in Singapore, they told me this. This was a psychologist who said, if you're going to praise somebody, because the way we have been conditioned, you praise somebody and say, you're a wonderful girl, Jenny. It doesn't go in. You have to actually praise for a full 15 seconds. Research has shown Only after 15 seconds does the praise get received. So what you should do this evening, when you see your wife, you say, "No, I'm so lucky to have you, wife. You're just a beautiful wife. I don't know what I'd do without you. You've always stood beside me. You're a great person, you're a great cook, and you're just so warm and friendly, and I love you very much. And I think that you're just such a beautiful person. I just admire your spirituality and your kindness." And 15 seconds. Otherwise, it doesn't go in. So you don't have to actually look at the clock, but at least, I know, lay it on thick. But a blame, a criticism, that goes in straight away. Second, you stupid woman. Straight away, that's in there. You don't need to repeat it at all. They'll never let you forget it. Now that's our human nature. And that's why I say that ignorance is bliss. Why can't we do it the other way around and ignore all of the blame and all the criticism? Oh, you're just stupid. You know what I'm doing. And a lot of the time, I'd say 99% of criticism is totally unfounded. They don't know what you're doing or why you're doing it. And all the difficulties you've had to face and all the pressures on you and all the complexities of you. You made a mistake. Yeah, we all do. Most criticism is totally unfounded. So we should ignore it. So if your wife's going to criticize you, just you don't hear it. But if she praises you, "Wow, you're such a wise woman. You're just so so clever to see my good qualities." So that way we ignore the negative and we focus on the positive. Now that becomes bliss. But it's not just the pain of the past. I mean, basically, it's best to ignore the whole lot, as far as I'm concerned. Even all your good things which you've done in the past. Because I'm not going to rest on my laurels. I can think of all the great things which I've done. But that stops me actually being sort of proactive right now. There's still more to be done. So if you just think of all the great things you've done, all the great things Australia have done, all the great things this Buddhist society have done, you can just get lazy. So let go of the whole past, totally. And if you ignore the whole past, the whole of your history, I know that people say, and this is a stupid comment, that if you don't remember history, or don't remember the mistakes of history, you'll repeat them. I don't think that's true. I think if you keep thinking about the mistakes of history, then you repeat them. But if you actually let these things go and be free, you've got a chance to do something different next time. And so that when we let go, ignore totally the past, it's amazing just how much peace and happiness you can have. So to me, especially as a monk, I try and just wake up in the morning and just don't carry last night with me into bed, and certainly don't carry it with me into the next day. To be someone who wakes up in the morning, like fresh, and not look back. I know that sometimes people ask, you know, "Well, would you have done things different? What about hindsight?" And when they ask me that question, I say, "Look, I don't do hindsight. When you look back, could you have done it differently? Could you have married another person? Could you have got another job? Could you have taken another branch in the roads of life and gone a different road?" I don't know. It's a waste of time thinking about that. If I'd have done things differently, I don't know whether it would have been better or worse. It might have been worse, it might have been better, who knows? I just can't say. So all this hindsight business, maybe I should have done something differently. Who knows? Could have been better, could have been worse. No way of knowing. So that way, it's just a waste of time just thinking about the past. And you feel totally free. So number one, yeah, ignorance of the past is bliss. It gives you a heap of freedom, and you don't need to carry that around. But even better, ignorance of the future. What does it mean, ignorance of the future? Ignorance of the future, in my book, means I haven't got a clue what's going to happen. The future is just so uncertain. And because it's so uncertain, that's actually wise ignorance. It means that I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what I'm going to say this evening. But also I know whatever happens, it'll be okay. If I give a stupid talk, you're not going to lynch me. I hope. If you do try and hang me, I'm so fat, I'll probably break the rope. I hope. But anyhow, whatever's going to happen in the future, the thing is you don't know. And that's another thing which I've learned from life. I've noticed that my whole life has been totally unexpected. If you'd have asked me when I was young, I was going to be sitting up here, a 58-year-old, talking to all you guys on a Friday night as a monk, that'd be impossible. Come on, get real. No way. But a lot of times, you know, that we get so worried about the future. We get so many plans about what we're supposed to be doing. And to me, just, I ignore those plans. Yeah, tentative plans, but keep it really, really loose. I was telling the monks on Wednesday night, he said that I gave a talk over in Netherlands some years ago to an executive group, and after the group had finished, you know, they gave me they never gave any money, but they gave a sort of a gift, a bottle of wine. That's what executives give you. Thank you very much, I can't have that. So probably a really good bottle of wine, because, you know, these were top execs, you know, in Netherlands somewhere, so, but anyway, I couldn't take it. Nevertheless, I was talking to them afterwards, and one of them said they noticed something interesting about just the way I wear my robes. Look, it's happening now, just my robes keep falling off. And he said, now that's something about you, they said, we've noticed. You wear your robes so loosely. And they said that they had gone to school in a Catholic convent. And those nuns in the Catholic convent had worn their robes so tightly. And that's actually what their personality was. And that's what they taught, just so tight, so controlled, and so lack of freedom. He said, you Buddhists, your robes are all over the place. I like that. You're nice and free. And I say, yeah, and that's also just the way we look at the future. Our future is not so tight and bound that it has to be this way. We're really loose. So in other words, the future can go left or right and we allow it to happen. We don't even put the future in the straitjacket of a nun's habit. Now that's a nice turn of phrase, isn't it? I'm going to send that off to some literary award, I don't know. But anyway, you can get the idea here. You keep the future sort of fluid and wide. And that's what we're talking about, what I call that ignorance of the future. Ignorance, I just realize I don't know how it's going to turn out. And so all my plans and all my sort of ideas are totally loose, like my robe. And when you keep it loose like that, you can adapt. Look, I tell you, that's how I give my talks, that's how we're trained to give talks. You don't plan, I haven't got a clue when you start a talk where it's going to lead. You explore yourself. That's why I get interested in my talks sometimes. Not all the time. It's actually true that sometimes, I'm being honest with you, sometimes you say something, you think, wow, that was really good. Where did that one come from? So you just allow the future to unfold, and that way your future does become blissful. Because I've seen so many people get so worried, and they're just such fear freaks. Because, you know, they think that something is going to go wrong, or they're afraid if it does go wrong. They're afraid of what might happen. They're afraid of climate change. They're afraid of losing all their money on the stock market. They're afraid of anything. And that means they've got a very tight view of the future. And so, as a Buddhist, as a meditator, I've got such a loose view of the future. I just don't know what's going to happen next. And so I just flow with it, let it happen. That way, it's a type of ignorance. The ignorance of what might go wrong, or what might go wrong. You just don't know. So it's a waste of time worrying about it. It's a waste of time even thinking about it. So that way you have two great ignorances. Ignorance of the past, ignorance of the future. Now there you're becoming blissful. The other ignorance is sometimes ignorance of what you're supposed to do. I've noticed this before, that sometimes people come in here and they want all the rules, what you're supposed to do. You know, sometimes we actually did have an etiquette list in this temple, but it's totally disappeared. I don't know where it's gone. But, you know, you do the right thing anyway. So instead of having those rules, which are, you know, external, of what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it, isn't it more important you're coming from the right place? So ignore all the externals and go to the internal. You know, like, you know, you are respectful. You come in here and you're trying to do the right thing. You really value coming in here. That's why you come every Friday night. I'm always quite surprised. It's a Friday. You've been working all week. There must be very bad TV on a Friday night that you spend your evenings in here, some of you. But whatever it is, you know, you value coming in here, so you respect coming in here. And that's the best rule, as long as you have respect. And that's not something which you can write on a piece of paper or tell you how to do it. That comes from inside. So sometimes you ignore all the outside things, and instead you focus on the inside things. And that ignorance of all those external things, I think, is really beautiful. It means that people actually do feel at ease when they come in here. Which means also that some of the technicalities, you know, like some years ago, there was a guy who was sitting over there. He wasn't sitting over there, but he actually lay down over there during the meditation, and he fell asleep and he started snoring loudly. I don't know if you remember that. I always remember that. And he was snoring so loudly that other people sort of interrupted the meditation. They woke him up, and there's a bit of kerfuffle over there. And after a while, sort of, I got the message why he was falling asleep. He was having a terrible home life. It was some domestic abuse. It must have been from his parents or something. And this was the only, and I think, was it a woman? No, it was a man. This was the only place he felt safe. Because, you know, in this particular hall over here, you know, you don't feel controlled, I hope. You know, you can put your legs wherever you want. You don't have to sort of, you know, worry about, am I doing it the right way or the wrong way? And there it is, a sort of a kind and sort of peaceful atmosphere, and an embracing atmosphere. And so he actually got the feeling of the energy in this room, calm and peaceful. And for him, it was the first place in weeks where he felt safe. And he hadn't slept for a long time. And that's why he lay down and had a really good sleep for 5 or 10 minutes until some Jojo woke him up. So you shouldn't do that. Now, the main rule in this place is compassion and kindness. Now, if you're going to fall asleep, you know, during meditation, fine. Well done. You're relaxing. So when other guys here, you should be kind enough to let them do that. And that way, you know, you can ignore their snoring. You don't have to worry about that. It's not affecting you. It's not your job or your business. You're not the police force of the Buddhist society. You're not SS members there to make sure everybody doesn't snore when they're meditating. That's not how we run a Buddhist society. You know, cut them some slack. That's why that great saying of Ajahn Chah, I always sort of quote him, because he had some great one-liners. He said, look, monks, if you're meditating, it's not the noise that disturbs you. It's you who disturb the noise. Now, when he said one-liners like that, I mean, that's really profound. It's not that guy snoring which disturbs me. It's me who disturbs him. And they did disturb him. That was the mistake. Because you can ignore those things. Ignore, it's not your business. None of your problems. Just let it go, and then it doesn't affect you. But when you say, oh, we shouldn't be snoring, it's wrong to be snoring, we shouldn't allow snoring, we should sort of blackball him, take his photograph and make sure he never comes in here again. And that's just really going too far. We don't do things like that, and it's wrong to do things like that. There's something essential which is wrong about that, because, you know, we're not trying to sort of be so negative. So we can ignore those sounds out of kindness. So the ability to ignore things is actually a great ability sometimes. You don't have to fix everything up. You can know these things and let them go straight away. When we were having tea in our monastery, I think it was last night, we just, you know, these monks, you know, we sit around having cups of tea, and just, I'm glad those conversations we have aren't recorded. You're laughing because you know why. But I was just talking about just how to be an abbot of a monastery in Australia. And, you know, as an abbot, you have role models, you know, people who teach you a lot about sort of running a business or running a company, especially about running a monastery. And my role model as abbot was a character in a TV serial which I used to watch as a kid. For those of you who are older than me, there's a very famous TV series called Hogan's Heroes. Remember Hogan's Heroes? And the character which I based my abbotship on is Schultz. I see nothing, I see nothing. And those of you who are laughing here, you recognize as a very lovable character. It was set in a prisoner of war camp during the Second World War, and Schultz was supposed to be the guard. And when these prisoners, you know, POWs, were going out, you know, to have a drink in the pub in the village, you know, supposed to be in a prisoner of war camp, I see nothing, I see nothing, I see nothing. When they're going out to sort of to signal the RAF where to bomb, I see nothing, I see nothing, I see nothing. He just wanted to have an easy life. So that's actually what I do in my monastery. I see nothing, I see nothing. Because you don't have to be the control freak, and sometimes ignorance, ignoring, is actually trusting other people. They're trying their very best, and you don't need to be the policeman. Now that's a very, very good role model for any parents here. You don't. It's actually better if you don't see what your kids are getting up to. It only causes you worry, and you can trust them. They'll get, you know, they'll sort of get through all the problems and difficulties. They'll learn from their mistakes, and they'll sort of become sort of mature human beings. But you know, don't go looking at them all the time. Don't put CCTV cameras in their bedrooms. Because, you know, that's not the way to look after your kids. You know, a bit of ignorance actually is bliss there. But, oh, one other very nice thing about ignorance, again, I've mentioned, don't worry what other people think of you or say about you. Because one thing I realized a long time ago is that people actually, they can't know you. A lot of people, so they put all these intentions on you. They really think they know why you do things. But, you know, your mind is so complicated. And all the reasons why you act like you act, why you say what you say, why you do what you do, is just, sometimes it's a mystery to yourself, let alone to other people. Sometimes even you don't know why you do these things. So how can anybody judge you? That's one of the great insights which I got from meditation. When I say, how can I judge myself? Why did I do that? And it was just my conditioning, just the way I was brought up. Just, you know, my understanding, I really thought it was a good thing at the time, but, you know, maybe, you know, it didn't sort of turn out the way I expected it to. But, you know, I can't judge myself. When I see other people judging me, I say, how can you read my mind? Do you know why I did this? Do you know all my history? Can you, like, be like a judge in court and have all the evidence to give a fair verdict on my actions or speech? Of course you can't. And that's why that when I realize they can't judge me, I stop judging other people. And I've been doing that for a long time. And I ask the monks, you know, those of you who come to one of the meditation retreats, every time you come into those interviews, some people come into my interviews and they say they've been sleeping all day. I say, very good. Sometimes they say they've been thinking sexual fantasies and I say, very good. Sometimes they think I've been thinking psychotic thoughts of going with the axe and chopping people's heads off. I say, very good. They say, I've just become enlightened. I say, very good. And I do that. Those of you who go to my retreats know I do that. And why do I do that? Because I know I just can't judge you guys. But all I'm doing is say, very good that you're being friendly with me. And, you know, you're so opening up. That's very good. It's very good that I'm actually not judging you. That's very good. Now, there's a reason you do that, because you're ignoring that tendency of a human being to judge somebody else and to categorize them, to give them grades. I can't do that anymore. Because when you don't judge a person, what's left to do? Except just by valuing them and accepting them and actually loving them. Because that's what my father did. He didn't judge me. And remember the story? Open the door of your heart. No matter who you are, no matter what you ever do, no matter who you are, no matter what you ever do, that means non-judging. Just a love which ignores all my faults and all my stupid things which I did. Now that ignorance of my father, he wasn't really ignorant. He saw what I did wrong, he saw my faults, he knew my idiosyncrasies. He's my dad, but he forgave them. In other words, that type of ignorance, pushing aside all the judgments to give a person unconditional love, now that is bliss. That type of ignorance, I say, yeah. We don't judge ourselves, we don't judge other people. And we can take that even further by not judging life. Is life a bitch? Does life suck? Or is life a bowl of cherries? I don't like cherries. I like a bowl, bunch of mangoes, that's more like. Or life is a plate of fish and chips with mushy peas. Of course it's not like that. But you know, sometimes we tend to judge things. So when we ignore this tendency to judge, life becomes far more peaceful and far more blissful. But it's not just life. Because many of you, because you're Buddhist, you go and meditate. Now in meditation, ignorance really is bliss. Because you know, a lot of people, and you've probably had this experience, when you first meditate it's very easy. And you get very peaceful very quickly. And then you learn what meditation is and it gets more difficult. I've seen this with many, many people. Sometimes the more you know, just the more it complicates things. And you never get into those deep meditations anymore. I was talking with someone recently. For me it was a very difficult sort of decision to make a long time ago, whether I should teach these states of meditation called jhanas. Should I just not tell people and just, you know, keep them ignorant of these jhanas? Or should I tell them about what these jhanas are and explain it to them in detail? Because the problem is, with these jhanas, if you want them, you can't get them. But if I tell you what they are, then you want them. You know, listen, these are the bliss better than sex. They're better than orgasm sort of states. And I've got to say, that's what they're like. So as soon as you say that, you know, I want big time. And therefore you don't get them. But if I don't say what they are, then you haven't got a clue what you're doing, you don't want anything. And you know, sometimes people get them. This is amazing just to see that, having taught these things for such a long time, when I explain them, very often people can actually come up and say, wow, that's amazing, that's what happened to me, I'd never realized it before. But then when I start teaching it, because you want it, then you can't get it. So there is a sense that ignorance sometimes is bliss. Because once you know what you're doing, there gets a sense of wanting to control and make it happen. And it's that knowledge which incites control, which messes things up. So when we don't know so much, when we become more simple, in other words, we're not full of so much knowledge, then we tend not to control so much. And I remember learning this in fairy tales, but it was actually part of like medieval magic. If you know someone's name, you had control over them. And that idea was actually quite fascinating for me. Because when you have knowledge, you have control. And when you have control, you have all this lack of peace in this world, all this frustration and anger and disappointment. When you don't control, then you have this amazing sense of freedom and peace and bliss. So there is that sense in deep meditation. Ignorance, not knowing, is a bliss or a path to bliss. But the way that should work in your meditation, the way that I encourage you to do that, is this letting go of everything you've learned so far. As I mentioned, I think, last week, one of these one-liners, but this actually comes from me, not Ajahn Chah. Never let your knowledge stand in the way of truth. And I think you can understand what I mean there. When you have knowledge, when you have all of the ideas of how it should be, that's always going to be just an approximation to reality. You should never let that stand in the way of seeing things truthfully in this moment for yourself, way beyond the words and all of your knowledge. I think that's one of the reasons why some of these monks like Ajahn Chah, only 4 years at school, and they just could meditate so well and get so wise. Whereas for us, 12 years at school, 4 years at university, and we're still damn stupid. Why is that the case? And there's a sense there that we fill our heads with too much knowledge. And does that solve problems? You know, that's one of the reasons I became a monk. There's many reasons why you become a monk, but one of the reasons, you know, that I did so well at school, you went to one of these top universities, and the college system at Cambridge meant you actually could socialize with some of these Nobel laureates. And these were incredibly powerful minds. These were the top of the tree with the, you know, the intellect league. And you could meet them, you can talk to them. And what really struck me was, you know, really how stupid these people were in life. They were brilliant in their fields, but they were stupid in life. And that really shocked me, because I expected someone who got a PhD to be able to use their intellect, you know, to solve their problems of life and to be wise and to be happy and to be easygoing, but they weren't. They were just control freaks. They were having depressions and anxiety disorders just like everybody else. What's the use of such intellect if it doesn't create happiness and a sense of personal freedom? And that's actually one of the reasons I thought that way of knowledge wasn't leading anywhere where I wanted to go. I wanted to have some fulfillment, some peace, some happiness, some real understanding of the meaning of my life. And that was just giving you Nobel Prizes. Yeah, big deal. It's not really worth it. But when you sort of go in to meet these people who've had hardly any education, now these were wise people. And they didn't need to know so much. Because when you know so much, you feel so little. You live in the world of thoughts and ideas and words and concepts. You never see the real thing. I'm sorry I can't better this simile, which I often teach, especially on retreats. It's a simile of Lao Tzu's student. Lao Tzu would go on a walk every evening. The great founder of the Taoist tradition, going for a walk every evening, would allow one of his students to accompany him. One evening, this young man accompanied him. They reached a ridge in the mountains at sunset, and it was a gorgeous sunset, and the student couldn't stop himself but saying, "Wow, what a beautiful sunset." He'd broken the golden rule. Lao Tzu turned around, would never let that young man go on a walk again. He spoke during the silent walk. And when the other students asked him, said, "What did he do wrong? What's so bad about suddenly saying what a beautiful sunset? What's wrong with that?" And this was the important part of this story. Lao Tzu said, when that student said, "What a beautiful sunset," he was not watching the sunset anymore. He was only watching the words. And that to me sort of was so eloquent why that people don't see the truth. He wasn't watching the sunset. He was just watching the words. And there's a huge difference between seeing a sunset and seeing what is a beautiful sunset in your mind. Seeing the words. And too often we just live in that commentary. Now, ignorance of that commentary, which is all your knowledge of what a sunset is supposed to be, all your learning, all the stuff which has been put in your head, ignorance of that, now that is actually learning how to see the truth. And that is bliss. Which is why, when I say don't let your knowledge stand in the way of truth, you do really have to let go of that conceptual world, to let go of thinking, which is why we start our meditation, present moment awareness and silence. So you just have no thoughts, no words in your mind. And that's such a brilliant way to get into deep meditation, because when you've got no thoughts, no words, there's no way you can want anything. There's no way you can articulate sort of a goal for yourself, or a path for yourself, or a journey for yourself. You get totally disabled. And that disabledness in your mind of doing things means you get still very quickly. Silence leads to stillness, and stillness leads to bliss. Now that type of ignorance, ignoring the inner commentary until it disappears, giving it no value at all. Now this is, you're getting into the big blisses. And you don't have to have jhanas and the deep meditations to know what I'm talking about. Many of you have gone to quiet places. Maybe, especially here in Australia, deep in the bush, where there's no one around for 100 miles. And it's so quiet there. Maybe one of the first times I noticed that silence was just in a forest in Sussex, in deep winter, and going out there early in the early morning. You talk about mad dogs and Englishmen. Not even a mad dog would go out in that snow. English monk would. It was so cold early in the morning. But nothing moved. All the animals were hibernating, including the sane part of the human race. And there was no wind stirring the trees. When I stopped walking, the whole world stopped. Nothing stirred. That was awesome. I can never forget that. There are moments of peace. Moments of stillness where you ignored all the words and all the movements. Now I think you all know just how sacred is stillness and how blissful that experience is. Now those are the moments which we can find. Those are the spiritual highs. And it's those spiritual highs is what put everything else into perspective. We've got like a pinnacle from which we can look down on the world. We can get the idea of where this all fits together. Now that is not knowledge, that is wisdom. Now when you say knowledge, yeah, knowledge, ignorance of that knowledge, that is bliss. But the ignorance of that knowledge is wisdom. And this is why all the wisdom which religions like Buddhism have been promoting in the world are not wisdom which is learned by looking at books and by studying and by learning how to remember things and learning how to write about them in examinations. That's not how we learn in spiritual paths. We learn by being brainwashed, by coming to this place every Friday night again and again and again until eventually I get through to you and you shut up inside and you're still. And all of that knowledge stops. It takes a lot of guts to have the courage to let go of everything you've ever been taught and all your critical mind and to stop. Like being in the snow-filled forest early in the morning until nothing moves, nothing in your body or your mind stirs. And in that silence, that's where you touch wisdom. That's where you know bliss. That's where you understand freedom and the meaning of life. If you haven't got a forest, if you haven't got the bush, in this busy world, you can always just sit down wherever you are, close the eyes and meditate and get to that stillness. Now to me, that's the ultimate meaning of ignorance is bliss. Where the world doesn't move, where all your knowledge stops. This is a type of ignorance, ignoring all the past, all the knowledge, all the ideas, And there, in that ignoring of the past, ignoring of the future, ignoring of all the judging, ignoring of everything, there, when that empties out, what's left is wisdom, stillness, freedom, bliss. Thank you for listening. So, your ignorance is bliss. So, anyone got any comments or questions about? We'll talk about. Yeah. Ah, so you're saying that you've got a friend who's really interested in history and politics and is an intellectual, and he talks to you, and if you don't really engage, he's going to think you were stupid. Join the club. You know, there's many advantages in being stupid. In the Chinese art of war, to win a battle, you pretend to be stupid, and then they let their guard down, and then you can strike. But no, it's not to try and get the better of him. Sometimes, oh yeah, you can talk like that. It's not stupid, because a stupid person is somebody who's not happy. A stupid person is someone who causes problems for themselves in their life. And they realize that, you know, you talk to Ajahn Chah like that, and you say, yeah. And then, some he'd just come across with something which would just totally sort of blow you away. And you realize, no, that was what wisdom was. Well, look, what was one of those examples? Just one of the examples of Ajahn Chah's wisdom. Just, this is just how ignorance was really, really bliss. Because he didn't know sort of how to, he never learned any psychology, didn't do any majors in any university on psychology, but he knew exactly how things worked. It's one of the cases which was in, I wrote about in the Opening the Door of Your Heart, when, because I mentioned this in Melbourne a couple of days ago. So sitting under his hut, and this villagers, the headman from a nearby village, sort of rushed in and told him that there was one of the girls in the village had been possessed by a devil and was just really crazy. And they said they were bringing her to Ajahn Chah. We could actually hear the girl screaming at the gate. Because it was maybe about 800 metres, I think, from the gate to where Ajahn Chah was where his hut was. So you could hear her screaming. And so as soon as Ajahn Chah realised there was a woman who was possessed, he told one of the novices, dig a hole, I want a hole dug, a big hole. He told someone else, boil some water, I need some boiling water, lots of it. Now, I hadn't got a clue what he was up to. This was totally, totally sort of, out of left field. But, when Ajahn Chah started doing things like that, we really got interested, because what's he up to next? It was like, entertainment and a mystery and all at the same time. He was totally unpredictable, this guy, because he was ignorant of what he was supposed to do. So he had this natural wisdom which just adapted to the moment perfectly. And as they dragged this woman into his hut, I mean, she was literally foaming at the mouth and big eyes, and it took about two or three villagers to hold her down, and she was screaming obscenities. I mean, people didn't do that in those days, not in the holy monastery. And they were just made so hard to sort of stop her grabbing at Ajahn Chah and attacking him. And all the time he was saying, I need that hole dug digger, deeper. I need more boiling water. It's not enough, more boiling water. And then she was struggling, and then we find out what he was up to. He said, this is a very dangerous devil inside this woman. The only way we can deal with this is to throw her in that hole, pour boiling water all over her, and then bury her. That's the only way we can get rid of this dangerous demon. Now, Ajahn Chah was so eccentric, he could have done that. Certainly that woman thought he might do it. she started calming down. She knew deep inside if she didn't get her act together quick, she'd end up in that hole with boiling water all over her. And the next 2 or 3 minutes, before that water was all boiled, she was sitting there calmly taking the 5 Buddhist precepts. And that was brilliant. I mean, that was really sort of, you know, out of this world brilliance by someone who had no knowledge at all of psychology but had an understanding of the moment and could actually understand what needed to be done. Now, if you try that, you're just repeating somebody else's knowledge. That's not truth anymore. It won't work. So when you don't allow knowledge to stand in the way of truth, you can be totally reactive to this moment. And it works. You're successful. And that's that ignorance of what you're supposed to do. So you can actually open up to what's the right thing to do. And that's bliss. So you're not stupid. People find out, wow, now where do you get all your wisdom from? By ignoring your knowledge. Okay, thank you for that.